Welcome to Kivia, the spirit of sauna. Join your hosts, Alan Jalishaw and Alyssa Lansdell, as they explore the history, culture, and lifestyle of sauna. Whether you're a lifelong aficionado and expert like Alan, a relative newbie and budding enthusiast like Alyssa, or just curious to see what all the fuss is about, this is the podcast for you. Sauna is so much more than meets the eye, so breathe deep, get comfortable, and share in the search for the true spirit of sauna.
Hello, and thank you for joining me and my co-host, sauna enthusiast Alan Jalishaw, in this virtual sauna. Hi, Alan.
Hello, Alyssa.
Alan, today we're tackling a subject that goes hand in hand with sauna culture. We've talked about it a lot, but it's polarizing to say the least. I think it could actually be one thing, the one thing that may be preventing a lot of people who are sauna curious from actually trying sauna.
I believe so. You know, I find the subject quite mystifying, to be honest. Of course, we're talking about nudity around the sauna. And yeah. Now I'm Finnish Canadian, and I grew up going to sauna at my grandparents' cottage. I've explained that before, but you know, my grandmother and I have had sauna every chance we've had up until she was in her 90s. And like most Finns, I always thought it was normal to go to sauna naked. But it has been hard to explain it to my Canadian friends. And hopefully today we're going to learn more about nudity, at least from a Western perspective.
Yeah, I'm excited about this one. We scoured the globe to find someone who could speak to this topic, the expert of all experts, and we actually found her down under, as it were.
Yes, today's guest is an honorary associate professor at the University of Sydney, Australia, in the Department of Gender and Cultural Studies. She's the author of numerous articles and books, including one that really caught our attention, Nudity, A Cultural Anatomy. Dr. Ruth Barkin, welcome to Kivia.
Thank you very much for having me, Alan and Alyssa.
Yes, thanks for being here. Now, nudity or being naked is intrinsically linked to sauna, for better or for worse. And I know you know this, while some cultures are comfortable with being in the sauna naked with friends, family, even perfect strangers, other cultures are really put off by the idea. Now, before we turn our attention to some of our burning questions surrounding how and why we feel the way we do about nudity, let's start with the origin story for your book, Nudity, A Cultural Anatomy. What was it that got you interested in nudity?
Well, yes. I mean, I've been a professional nude watcher, as it were, for, you know, several decades now. And it is interesting to me that there was an actual precise moment when I had the idea for this, which is, for me, I think is quite unusual. I was having an acupuncture treatment, and it was somebody with a practitioner I didn't know. It was near my work, and I was very stressed, and I just made a spur of the moment appointment with somebody I didn't know. And he got me to undress, and then I put a teeny tiny towel just covering me. And I was kind of humiliated, but passive and angry, but did nothing about it, you know, having been sort of forced to strip right down. And I thought to myself as I lay there, I'd rather be naked than only barely covered. And then I thought, oh, that's interesting. I'll write a book about that. And so I never went back to him, but I did write a book.
Excellent. So I have to ask, when you decided to go for it and write this book, how did your peers react to the choice of subject matter?
Well, I was part of a very quirky, lovely group of scholars at a newly formed university. So in Australia, there were all sorts of amalgamations at one stage, and colleges became universities and so on. And so we were brought into this what had been an agricultural college, and they wanted some humanities. So they, you know, it was very quirky and a wonderful group of people, and they were so encouraging and, you know, go for it. But the broader university environment was more cautious. In fact, I got a research grant, and the funding body, which was a sort of old boys network in the what had been the college, turned it down because they didn't think it was serious or respectable enough. And so our head of school had to go and talk to them, and she kept talking about the famous book by Kenneth Clark, you know, very respectable, his book on the nude in fine art. And she kept saying, when Lord Clark first studied this, Lord, because he was by this stage a Lord in England, to, you know, to vouch for its respectability of the topic. And even, you know, I went to the British Library to do some archival research, and at one point there, you know, like one of the librarians just kept subtly refusing to give me a book. I wanted to have a look at a book called Nude Poetry, and she kept just telling me it wasn't available until finally I got another person, and even then they made me sit right under them. So, yeah, yeah. But meanwhile, families and friends were great. They just kept asking for many, many years, how's the nude book coming along?
I love it.
You'd think that there'd be a lot of material written on the subject of nudity or nakedness for whatever reasons, but when you first began looking into nudity as a subject, what were you surprised to find?
Well, I was surprised to find that there was almost nothing that tried to address nudity as a kind of comprehensive phenomenon, that tried to have a holistic view. Later, I suppose, when I tried to do that myself, I became less surprised about this because, you know, it's a kind of fool's errand in a way. But there were very sort of, there was obviously a huge literature in fine arts about the nude in fine art, and there was a feminist counter-literature to that in fine arts. There were lots of studies of pornography, and there were studies in disciplines like sociology and criminology and psychology that took naked practices as deviant, socially or psychologically deviant. So they studied nudism as a deviant practice, striptease as a deviant practice, flashing as a criminal and deviant, and so on. So there was very, very little. There were a couple of very specific studies, like nakedness as a metaphor in the play King Lear, for example. But really, really nothing much.
I mean, maybe shouldn't surprise us. I'm thinking the word uptight's coming to mind, but we'll talk about that. We'll unpack that. So if you really think about it, I mean, the topic of nudity is really broad. I was thinking of all the expressions that have to do with being, you know, bearing all and, you know, the naked truth. And there's so many avenues, so much to unpack from the lens of pop culture, culture, art, religion, et cetera. It's really a massive topic. So how then, now that you knew that there really wasn't much written on it, how did you go about approaching this massive topic in order to distill it down to a few hundred pages?
Yeah, it was a kind of deliciously foolish thing to take on, you know, with hindsight. But so I think on the one hand, there were my research methods. So I just, and people were very helpful. Everybody sent me nude stuff all the time. So I just kept clippings in folders of everything that I found from, you know, newspapers, every nude snippet, every strange nude event, any court case that really sort of centralized it in an unusual way. So I kept an enormous file of clippings and made big folders and gradually developed them into themes. And I cast the net very wide. And I cast the net very wide in terms of the academic literature and just followed databases no matter what disciplines they were in. And from that, I mean, it's interesting, Alyssa, that you mentioned like the naked truth and those kind of things. Then I came to realize the metaphorical richness of nudity and started to sort of unpack all its many, many metaphorical and symbolic meanings. But then what I really also tried to do as a research approach was to not just concentrate on these metaphorical meanings, nor just on representations or images or artworks or films, which was the dominant approach, but to try to do both of those things. But the third thing that I really wanted to do was to connect it up to lived experiences of naked. What does it feel like to be naked in different contexts? And so to do that, I interviewed, you know, so many people in every possible profession or walk of life that had something to do with nudity. So gradually, you know, and then gradually, of course, I found key repeated themes and asked sort of big philosophical questions. But I started by collecting and collecting and collecting, and by this determination not just to write about images and not just to write about metaphors, but to connect it to lived experience.
I love that. And I think everybody is fascinated by this topic, whether or not they admit it. And I think that in the Western world, I find it, listen, this is my own opinion, but from the time I was a teenager, maybe even younger, I remember thinking, it's so weird that we can all, like as a kid, I can sit around and watch people getting blown up on television, but you can't look at Janet Jackson's nipple. Like I always thought that was super backwards. So what are the major influences on the idea of nudity that seem to influence how Westerners see or feel about nudity?
Yeah, I agree with you about that, the sort of jumble of contradictions and paradoxes around nudity too. That's it's our attitudes and our rationalizations and so on are kind of inconsistent and incoherent, really, aren't they? Yeah. I think the thing that unlocked for me my thinking about the major influences on our thinking in the Western tradition was an essay by Mario Paniola called Between Clothing and Nudity. And in that essay, he outlined two broad traditions that have influenced the Judeo-Christian Western tradition, and the Greek tradition, in which nudity was the ideal, if you think of the, you know, the statues of virtue and authenticity and heroism and so on that come from that tradition, and then the Judaic tradition, as he calls it. And in that one, he says God is imagined as clothed in glory, and so stripping away is imagined as a distancing from God, as a vulnerability, as a state of misery and so on. So you had these, I guess, if you want to oversimplify it, fundamentally very positive tradition, and then about of representing nudity, and then a more negative one, if you like, in which it figures negatively. And then now, of course, there's consumer culture, which is a huge and conflicting influence. There's migration and globalization, where all kinds of different value systems collide in contemporary multicultural societies. And there's social media, where everybody can do stuff with images and send it around the world in a second. So these two big traditions, and then a sort of a host of modern trends and changes that have made it even more complicated.
So we put this all in context of saunas. Do you have any guesses as to why North Americans are more reserved than, let's say, Europeans are when it comes to bearing all in a sauna?
It's really hard to know, because I think it's pretty much the same here in Australia as well. So I've really thought about it, and it's clearly not a question of climate. It's not the cold, is it? Because, you know, Scandinavia and so on. And in any case, the converse here in Australia, where there's equal nervousness or, you know, caution around it, and we have a climate where people walk around in bikinis on the beach without any problem. So it can't be the climate. And I think it must be to do with our shared British inheritance, you know, and the values. And even then, there were plenty of English nudists and naturists in the 1920s and so on, including Christian nudists. So it's really quite a puzzle, but I think it must be some Anglo-Saxon inheritance. That's all I can imagine.
I was thinking that, but at the same time, Canada is so diverse in its culture, but without a predominant culture that accepts nudity, then it's really hard to see.
Yes, because nudity is always so, its meanings and its experiences are so very contextual as well. So there are these big sweeping things, but also it's always very particular.
Right. You mentioned you interviewed a lot of people in order to write your book, and I imagine you actually talked to some nudists to get their perspective. You must have had some pretty interesting conversations during that research portion. What did you discover in your research that surprised you the most?
Oh, what a good question! And you're right, I did have fascinating conversations with, you know, masseurs, wig makers, people who made pornography, funeral workers, people who cut up bodies for anatomy lectures, you name it. So, yes. And I went to lots of unusual events like nude night surfing, and I was part of a nude Guinness Book of Records nude lion dancing. So I went to lots of things and talked to lots of people. And so out of that, there were always interesting little facts that were quite surprising. So I asked a wig maker about, you know, pubic wigs, or called merkins, and, you know, she told me they're not very common, that she'd only made very few, but they're mostly used in sex work, you know. So little snippets of things like that interested me, or that the Victorians didn't really cover up their table legs, as is the kind of cliche, to keep them modest. Or people back in the day when soft porn magazines were in magazine format, the people who, for censorship reasons, to meet classification rules, had to hide female genitals, sort of blur them. But one of the things they would do was they would take your elbow crease, like a photo of somebody's creased elbow, if you imagine a crooked elbow, and they would cut and paste that and use that for female genitals, because that would that would meet, you know, perversely, that would meet the classification rules because it was, in their word, healed to a single crease. So I learned all kinds of things that are, you know, odd and so on. But I think, if I may, if you've still got patience for this answer, I think one of the things that surprised me so much was that naturism as a social movement, a political, ideological movement in Europe in the 1920s and 30s, I hadn't realised how political it was and how organised it was and what other currents of thought it connected to. So a lot of the early naturists were socialists or Marxists, and some of them literally believed there would be like a nudist revolution. There were eugenicists, quite a few were Christians, many were feminists. Many of them argued that the enforced modesty of clothing was particularly dangerous to women and saw that nudism would help women's fight. So that really interested me, that whole cluster of early 20th century discourses.
Clearly, there's a lot going on in this subject. I didn't realize.
We're fascinated. Wow.
Interesting people. But you also wrote a very interesting article called The Naked Truth on Nudity, where you say that nudity is largely contextual. You mentioned that earlier when you mentioned it. If you were to ask me, I guess an example that comes to mind would be in a change room at a gym or a fitness place, perhaps. You're going to expect some degree of nudity, with people being in various stages of undress or completely undressed. Is that what we were referring to?
Yes, it is. And I think what's interesting and important is that contexts can change, and they can change on such different scales. So a context can change in a matter of seconds. You can be feeling completely at home on a naked beach or skinny dipping alone on a beach where you think you're alone. But if a person shows up with binoculars or jeering or something like that, that context has changed immediately and your experience changes within seconds. But contexts also change like over decades. So in the time that I've been an adult, the experience of changing, to take your example, in a gym or a fitness centre is quite different, partly because of our awareness of child protection and all sorts of things, partly because society has become more diverse and you're more aware that a certain kind of nudity or might affront people and you don't want to do that. But and also I think partly because the body shame and body individualization and so on has changed over the decades. So there's way less openness, I would say in an Australian shower or gym or whatever, and much more individualization, and that's being reflected in architectural design where you're now getting more cubicle style architectural arrangements for that. So contexts are really interesting because they operate at different scales.
Yes, there's context and then there's proximity. And I can illustrate this with a personal story that happened like 25 years ago at a gym in downtown Toronto. This is how much it struck me. I mean, I've told the story so many times and we laugh every time I tell it. But at the time, it was so shocking to me. I was in a change room at the gym full of naked women, but one of them actually... right next to me, I'm sitting on a bench putting my top on or whatever, and I look at this woman's got her foot like up on the bench drying her hair, and she is totally in the all together. And I'm like, I turned and went, whoa, hello. And so, you know, to me, that was, I have no problem with you know, nudity in that context, but it was the proximity. So so my question about that is, the unspoken rule is, you know, you're not supposed to invade people's personal space, but in a sauna, you're sitting like bum to bum. Alan, you can back me up on this.
Yes,
right? So what are your thoughts on proximity when it comes to feeling comfortable in the nude?
Oh, you're right. I mean, because part of it is that you're instantly trying to work out what's going on, aren't you, in something like that. Is this person being deliberately provocative? Are they coming on to me? Is it like, so your mind is going, what is going on? But you're right that proximity forces you to have to try to interpret differently. And comfort, the question of comfort and discomfort, it's so complex because that person may have been completely oblivious to the possibility that somebody else would be discomforted or at the very least surprised. And that might depend on their own family history, their gender identity, the things that have happened to us in our life will give us very, very, and our, as well as our, you know, cultural beliefs, our religions, our age, our generation, will give us these different potential and actual experiences of bodily comfort or discomfort. And we all negotiate that all the time. But yeah, once it's right, the proximity of that really gives you nowhere to run or hide, does it? You have to kind of negotiate that. But is it, I mean, Alan, you can tell us more than I can, but I'm assuming that in the sauna there's just the social rules that are at play and the social codes, which would be completely different some meters away outside the sauna. And, you know, like the Australian equivalent, I suppose, would be that on the beach you can be wearing very, very little. But as soon as you get back up towards the street, you need to be wearing more. And by the time you're in a shop across the road from the beach, you wouldn't be wearing a bikini. And these are just social codes that we've incorporated and learnt, and we notice them when they're breached. I presume that would be the same in the sauna, is it? Is that the case?
It is, and a couple of things. So when you're in the sauna, you might be completely naked, but when you come out of the sauna, you might employ some basic modesty with a towel. And then, like you said, the farther you get away from the sauna, then your clothing or your level of nudity changes. That's one thing. The other interesting thing is that I find that that comfort zone, that little cloud that everybody lives in, is smaller in a sauna, whereas in you might be willing to get within a foot or two of somebody in a bar, but in a sauna, you're actually okay, literally sitting bum to bum. You are as close to touching somebody as possible and not worry about it, not being of no concern, which I find unusual, but that's just an interesting observation.
Well, I think our body schema, you know, what phenomenologists would call our body image or our body schema, not our views of ourselves, but actually how we operate within our body unconsciously. It's one of the things about it is it's very dynamic and very flexible. So, yeah, our sense of our body boundaries and so on changes in different contexts. And, of course, they're never the same for all humans in the first place, depending on a whole range of factors. But, yeah, the dynamism is of that. It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah. And along those lines, so just a sidetrack here a bit, one of the beliefs that the Finns have is they believe that in a sauna, all people are equal. Sauna is the great equalizer. You could be in there naked. You don't know who's wealthy. You don't know who's a CEO. It could be a street cleaner. It doesn't matter. But wearing clothes changes that dynamic. Can you share a little bit about how clothes or accessories reveal about a person?
Well, they do, don't they? They reveal everything from your age, your subcultural affiliation, your religion, your gender, your sexuality. They reveal everything. But I think I also want to contest that claim a little, because it's also the core claim of nudism that once you strip your clothes off, everybody is equal and no one knows who's who. And there is some truth to that, and it's also a beautiful ideal, so I'm not disparaging of it. But I think the truth is more complicated, because I think our bodies themselves mark who we are. Our bodies are cultural things. They're not some naked flesh that just sits like a clothes horse underneath our clothes. Our tattoos, our haircuts, our body shape, our accents, our teeth, the shape of our bodies, our jewelry, our voice, our accent, all of these do give a lot away about who we are socially and so on. So I think it's a lovely ideal, and it's the same ideal that nudists share about we are. But in the end, I came to the conclusion in my work that nudity was the metaphor for the lack of metaphor. It was this ideal that there's just this bare humanness, that we're all the same, but that is really a longing or a fantasy.
Interesting, because I guess we're used to judging people with what they're wearing and how they present themselves, and now instantly you're forced to look at them from a different perspective just by nature. Like you said, tattoos, how they shave their hair, their bodies in general. That's totally fascinating.
Yes.
Yeah, well, at the same time, anyone who participates in those practices is actively wanting and willing that not to be the case as well. Like, it really is right. I do agree that it's a kind of ideal and orthodoxy that people strive to work towards.
Yes, ideologically, I guess that's it's something to aspire to for sure. Now, our sound engineer, Mike. Hello, Mike. Take the mic. You live in Berlin. Mike recently shared that many of the saunas there are textile free. And if you do make the grave mistake of wearing a bathing suit in a textile free sauna, you will be scolded. You're going to get in trouble. You're going to get your bim spanked. So can we talk about why this may be? Is it possible that one person wearing a swimsuit when everyone else is naked really completely upsets the power dynamic?
Yeah, it is, isn't it? Because those practices of social nudity, like nudism, like charity nude events, like the sauna from your description of it, they all rely on participation and on this ideal that we were just talking about our shared humanity. And as soon as somebody is dressed, then you have a spectator, you have an audience, as it were, rather than a whole group of participants. And so this idea that we all share some humanity, we all share our vulnerability, we share this humanness gets altered even with just one person. But of course, it is really tricky. So I acknowledge that, but it's also so tricky then in today's climate to enforce nakedness because of so many things that we now realize about people's life experiences and trauma and religion and family background and gender identity and so on. So that principle of meeting people where they're at and including people regardless is also an important principle, and the two conflict. So it's really interesting. I'd be wondering if there have been legal challenges, for example, in Berlin on sort of inclusion grounds or discrimination grounds based on enforced nakedness.
Yes, Mike, is your name on any depositions or just kidding? But have you experienced this? Have you witnessed it, Mike?
Well, you know, just recently they just changed the law here so that at a public pool, like women can be topless at a public pool, which is never possible before. But yeah, we were joking around about that the other day. It's like, well, when you're in the sauna, then you're wearing clothing.
Right.
Yeah. That's a problem, you know? Where it's like, so yeah, I think they do actually say that people just kind of reach over and say, tap on you on the shoulder, say, no, you shouldn't be wearing that in here. Okay. You know? That's basically what happens. It's not really like a written down rule or anything, just sort of like an unwritten.
And if you carry on down that theme there, if you go to the far end of the spectrum, if someone wears too much clothing somewhere where less clothing is typically the norm, can it draw the same kind of negative attention?
Yeah, isn't that interesting? I think one of the things that I concluded when I was doing this study was that because nudity is something that everybody shares, and because we have it this metaphor that it's meant to be sort of neutral or nothing, it's just, you know, the naked truth, and because all of our individual lives start nudity as, you know, in the nude for even a brief moment, then it's become this really powerful vehicle for contests about humanness itself, because it's seemingly nothing, just like my grant givers thought there was nothing to see here. You know, it's either everything or it's nothing. And so what I came to realize was that, at least in the Western tradition and certainly from Darwin onwards, nudity was this vehicle in deciding where people sat on this supposed continuum or gradation of humanness, from the subhuman, from animals, from savages, from primitives, through to this supposed norm, which, guess what, you know, just aligned with European colonial norms. And then at the other end, yes, you can be too dressed, in inverted commas, overdressed, which it's interesting to think that feminizes you. You're, you know, an airhead, or you're frivolous, or you're vain, or you're a pompous Renaissance fool, or in modern times you're a woman wearing a veil and you've got too many secrets. So it's like this sliding scale of how much is the, in inverted commas, correct amount of covering. And it's the dominant groups who decide who's fit to be considered sort of subhuman, fully human, dangerously secretive, and so on.
Yeah, I think the biggest issue that I've encountered is that nudity or being naked is typically thought of as something sexual, but really nothing could be farther from the truth when it comes to sauna culture. Like I said earlier, I mean, I sauna with my grandmother, my friends, my family. I know this is a big question, but why is the typical reaction in North America to assume that nakedness is always sexual?
Yeah, it is a knee-jerk reaction, and I think it's getting, if I can use this value judgment, worse in that regard. It's certainly the same here in Australia. And I think, and again, this is a sweeping kind of generalization, but I think it's because nudity used to have a whole lot of meanings metaphorically. It could mean everything from heroism or virtue or, you know, vulnerability or shame, or, you know, a whole rich set of different meanings, and that they have been slowly whittled away, and also the variety of naked experiences got whittled away once you had architectural developments and things like indoor plumbing and individual bedrooms and individual houses with multiple bedrooms. People aren't walking down the streets to the village bathhouse as they were in, you know, centuries past, and they're not sharing rooms with visitors and guests and, you know, 10 children and so on. And so this increasing privatization of our bodies enabled by wealth and by technology, and then this commodification of nudity through consumer culture and media culture, which is only interested in the titillating meanings and not the others. I think a whole wealth of other ways of being naked and other potential meanings of nakedness have just, over the last sort of couple of centuries, drifted away. I mean, in the 19th century, there were still politicians and royal family and so on who would have pictures of their children naked as part of their family portraits, or, you know, back in revolutionary France, the aristocratic women who would be having their topless paintings and so on because they were meant to be virtues of charity and so on. That doesn't happen anymore. Those meanings have just kind of disappeared.
Interesting. Now, I want to talk about vulnerability. I don't think, have we used the word vulnerable? I can't believe we've gone this far in this episode without, but we had a married couple on this podcast a little while ago whose marriage, they said, was made stronger thanks to their joint love of sauna and taking sauna together. Remember Alan, Chris, and Julie Rice, they kicked off this season, right? Yeah. They said that in the sauna, it was really hard to stay mad at each other. Their resentment seems to melt away. Why do you think being nude or almost naked, like in the sauna, can make people more vulnerable or open? And did you find that in your research?
Yes, I did. And I did hear stories from married couples as well who said very similar things. Just before I speculate about that, I've just noticed that beautiful phrase, taking sauna, which,
yes.
Isn't that beautiful? It's not like going to do something together. It's like sauna is a thing, like taking tea or something, which we can both participate in, that's sort of bigger than us, isn't it? And it's sort of, that's already part of what you're talking about, I think. It's a
ritual,
lovely phrase.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I think that shared vulnerability, both metaphorical and literal, is true and important. It is. I think there is a correlation, that the idea of openness and truth and vulnerability and so on are not just metaphors. They are embodied experiences, and being naked can, in the right contexts, absolutely open. Well, in the wrong context, it can open that up in horrifying ways, and in the right context, it can open up that vulnerability in beautiful ways. And that idea of our shared humanness, although, you know, as a cultural studies person, I'm always aware of the differences between humans and so on, but there is nonetheless something that we do all share, even if we experience it differently, and that opens it up to that. And then you have those other relaxing elements, as you do with nudism in Australia at least, which is the warmth here, the sun, but, you know, the sauna itself. But it really does have to be a shared activity, an equally shared activity, doesn't it? Because nudism is littered with stories of all these unwilling female partners being dragged unhappily to nudist places, and that's not enriching in a relationship if it's asymmetrical.
Right.
Yeah, so this is a lot of information here on nudity. So the ultimate question is, when it comes to nakedness or nudity, what's the big takeaway? What would you like people to consider or even think about when they get dressed or undressed?
Yeah, here I'm going to say, I guess, two contradictory things. Really, conceptually, in terms of thinking about nudity, it's the most complicated, paradoxical, shifting, interesting thing, which is why it's kept me interested for so long. And so if one were thinking about it, I'd always be wanting people to not think about it too simply, to not even assume that there's such a simple thing as a naked body. I mean, can an elbow be nude? I don't know. So conceptually, it's rich and complicated and paradoxical and fraught. But what I'd want people to actually hope for when getting undressed and undressed is quite the opposite, is a state of comfortable unself-consciousness about dressing or undressing. And wouldn't it be wonderful if we didn't have to think about that, and yet could also still be aware that not everybody's experiences are going to be the same? So again, this is an impossible ideal, isn't it, to not think about it ourselves, like the woman in the changing room that you described, Alyssa, to not think about it yourself, but somehow to be able to do that without affronting or scaring others. So it's really kind of impossible. But I think that unself-conscious relationship that you've described, Alan, to nakedness with friends, and even more mysteriously to me, with family, that seems the harder one than strangers to me, which is again about proximity, that's a wonderful thing. and the contexts that enable that to happen fairly and safely and so on are amazing.
You know, ultimately, the people that I meet that want to go to sauna, this is the challenge I have. And it's for those that are interested in experiencing a naked sauna. Do you have any advice on how to prepare them to look at the naked aspect? Is there something they should be doing? Or
So provided, as you say, that these are people who want this and for whom it's an appropriate choice in terms of their sense of self and their religion, their culture, their values, and so on. So for those people who are interested and it's just like there's one barrier, I guess there's two things. One is that you read every time people do group naked events like charity runs or whatever, people who haven't experienced it before report again and again and again how absolutely liberated they feel. So that is a good thing to allow people to understand. And I think the second thing is to say to people, you know what, people are actually a lot less interested in us than we think. Most people actually aren't that interested in other people, really, you know, and they'll have their eyes closed, they'll be relaxed, they're there for their own relaxation, they're not that interested in you, it's not really about you, that's your own problem, is the other sort of side of it, isn't it?
Absolutely.
So it sounds like you're saying if you're thinking about experiencing a sauna naked, do it as a group. Is that kind of what you're leaning towards? Does that make it easier or less?
It's hard to say, isn't it? Because I would, yeah. I think you need a buddy. Maybe a buddy, but not a, you know, in a group, but where you know one person. I think you'd need a buddy, wouldn't you? But with family, it could be confronting for people who haven't done that before, because families are complicated. And if you haven't grown up with that, that may be a surprising sort of thing. Yeah. But yeah, a buddy is always good. You need a team in life, don't you?
Yeah, you need support. You can't just run in there on your own and drop your clothes and expect the best experience, maybe.
Yeah. It's hard to know, isn't it? Again, just so much is contextual.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have learned a lot about nudity, but I don't know, the jury's still out on whether I'm going to sit in a public sauna naked. I'm not convinced, but I'm open to it now. I'm open to being vulnerable.
That's all we ask, Alyssa.
Yes, that's right.
Ruth Barkin, thank you so very much for joining us today. For our listeners who want to learn more, feel free to Google Friday essay, The Naked Truth on Nudity, and published on theconversation.com.
Or you can order a copy of the book, Nudity, A Cultural Anatomy, at bloomsbury.com. That's bloomsbury.com. Is it an audio book yet, Dr. Ruth Barkin?
No, but what a great idea.
I would like, your voice is so beautiful. I could listen to you. I think it should be read by the author.
I might try that. Yes. It's certainly an ebook and it's paperback. Hardback is too expensive. Don't do that. But there are lots of better
Unless it comes with full color pictures.
People were disappointed in my rather modest, overly conceptual pictures, alas, those who were looking for titillation.
Right. Well, you can find out more because seriously, we are all titillated and we are all on our chat right now, making plans to have book club with this. So, of course, we're going to make this available on our socials. Yeah, we might bring you in to chat about it again because it's been fascinating. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
And remember to visit our website, kivia.ca. If you have any questions on nudity, I'll try and answer them from my own experience. Or if you just have general questions, you can send me an email at alan@kivia.ca. And as usual, you can follow us on social media, Facebook and Instagram. Our handle is @KiviaSauna.
Thanks for listening to Kivia, the spirit of sauna. Please subscribe for additional episodes every 2 weeks. Take a moment to rate, review, and share the podcast. And follow us on Twitter and Instagram @KiviaSauna. This podcast is brought to you by Kivia.ca, Canada's premier destination for the sauna community, providing expert advice, quality saunas, custom designs, as well as authentic sauna accessories. Visit us today at Kivia.ca. This has been a Memory Tree production.